Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
Welcome back to 11 Personnel. Nick Roush and Adam Luckett are spinning our wheels. Actually, our wheels aren't spinning. Our wheels spun all the way back to Kentucky after an eventful week in Hoover, Alabama. Luckett, how does it feel to be back home after such a chaotic week at SEC Media Days?
Well, it felt good to sleep in my own bed. I will say that for sure. Just kind of a surreal week for a lot of reasons. Usually those media days, like, it can be a struggle to find stuff to write about or takeaways or anything like that. We'll see if you agree with me here in a second, but like, there was a lot to unpack from those 4 days.
Yeah, no shortage of stories here. Obviously, conference realignment talk shook things up to its core. But hell, even if we really were trying to, we could have talked a lot about Eli Drinkwitz just on day four being more eventful than normal. So there was a lot to be discussed. But if you're hearing some stuff in the background, I'm actually outside because I got tired of that air conditioning at the Winfrey Hotel. Look, and I know you like football weather, but that was too much.
Yeah, they don't want you sweating in there for sure. Keep it nice and cool in that big ballroom.
How does it feel to newfound stardom? Has it shook you to your core yet? Are you a changed man?
No, I think I'm still the same. But I mean, it was pretty wild. I'm not going to lie. Just having a couple days to like kind of soak it in has been pretty crazy. I've watched that clip probably 20 or so times. Kind of surreal. I'm just glad I could educate Mr. Saban on personnel packages. Feel like the sport's in a crisis since our greatest coach of all time does not know modern personnel packages.
that was pretty awesome, though. That certainly highlighted the week outside of the realignment talk. We also got Josh Pascal shouting out KSR regularly. That's always good whenever you got somebody at the podium giving you props.
Darren Kennard calling a shot in the East.
Yeah. We got all SEC selections. We also got our preseason predicted order of finish. And, Luckett, before you go off, I would like to just bring up the projected order of finish because did you see where Kentucky, not only did they finish third, we got two first-place votes for the Cates.
I did see that.
Surprising.
I did see that.
It wasn't me. It was not me. I'm happy to admit that when it comes to all SEC selections, I just quit. Like, I quit trying to be objective a while ago, and I just put all the cats towards the top because, you know, why not? And they're not going to be getting the votes elsewhere. But I do take my projected order finish seriously. I'm not going to be the one person who looks silly voting for the Cats in first place. When, in fact, I think I did put them second ahead of Florida. But
wasn't even the worst one there, Nick. We had a SEC vote for South Carolina.
Oh God, yeah. So imagine
at least Kentucky's gonna have like a legit team. But yeah, we got a vote for South Carolina to win the league. Oh, Shane Beamer.
He must have been awfully convincing. Much better than Brian Harsin.
No Auburn votes after that speech.
Yeah, and I think we were even maybe willing to do a podcast on Thursday, but it was Brian Harsin just killed the vibe. I mean, he absolutely killed the mood. Answered three questions in 30 minutes. I mean, look, and I like to hear the sound of my own voice from time to time. Actually, I don't. That's not even a funny joke. I hate the sound of my own voice. I can't imagine going on and on and on. Like that's he basically did his own personal podcast.
Yeah, he pulled I'm trying to think He pulled a Colin Cowherd there at the podium. I mean, that was incredible. And I remember sitting there, like, I have, like, after he was done talking, I was like, I've got nothing. I don't know what he said. I think it was, a lot of it was like, two things I remember. One, his kids like Auburn, which he was surprised by. And two, it's all about, you know, building itself, like building good habits. Outside of that, I had nothing, absolutely nothing from his 30 minutes.
Oh, it was bad. It was real bad. But you're right.
On driving home, he was on Feinbaum. I was listening to, and I got nothing from that either. At least Paul got to ask him more questions, but just like nothing. I mean, it was just bare bones type stuff.
And it, at least
from the new head coach.
At least in Shane Beamer's case, he would put emphasis on, you know, he shouted out the tight ends and stuff like that. And
he would name his players and stuff. We got none of that really from Harsin. It was just,
oh God, he was bad.
It was as boring as you could get.
Sam Pittman was not as energetic as I thought. Like, he definitely had some.
It seemed like he was a little nervous.
Yeah. Yeah. But he still had a couple decent lines. It was really from the classic Mark Stoops playbook of have like a prepared joke or two, but his line about, well, we're the defending national champions of toughest schedule. And I was thinking about it. I think we're going to try for a three-peat. So that was pretty good, because if you do look at their schedule, Arkansas, man, I thought my cousin Jeff had it bad up at Purdue.
Yeah.
Arkansas schedule, or whoever that is. Is it, if it's Juracek, dude, I appreciate that AD's outgoingness, but God, what a just way to put your new coach through the meat grinder.
And it's 2 years in a row where they have to play Georgia in the crossover.
Seriously.
Because that last, you know, the schedule last year, how funky that got, and then they got to go to Athens this year. Mm-hmm. Arkansas, man, we'll talk about realignment. We'll talk about realignment here soon, but like A&M coming in the league absolutely killed them because of the Texas pull that A&M got and it took away from Arkansas. And then if you add Texas and Oklahoma, like, I mean, I don't know how much lower they can get, but it's just like a tough climb. Like they more than anybody need the pod system mm-hmm. to come into effect because this division they're in is just, it's just bad. But even the media didn't pick them last. They picked Mississippi State last, but the biggest thing I really got from Pittman's comments were just like, he really loves Arkansas and he culturally is the biggest fit there. I think you could have for a 3-7 coach.
Mm-hmm.
Like he just fits the fabric and the DNA of what they kind of are, I feel like. And they love him for that. But like, the deck is so stacked against him, man. And he's got a great staff, I think. I really like Barry Odom as a defensive coordinator. I think Kendall Browse is a good offensive coordinator for Arkansas. They're doing some good stuff recruiting-wise, but they're like top 30-ish. They're recruiting like Kentucky kind of area. But they just – I mean, it's just tough, man. You have to feel for them. Like, if you go 6-6 this year, man, they should have a parade and go to the Texas Bowl and just everybody go get drunk and have a good old time.
Right.
Because that schedule is just, I mean, it's just a slaughterhouse, man. It's just tough. But if he got them good, man, I think that would be fun to watch them. Like if they could have like an 8-4 top 25 year, that would be fun. Third party viewing from my seat, just to see the celebration that would be.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. It isn't. You mentioned the how realignment hurt them, because it didn't make sense for Arkansas to just set up shop in Texas saying, hey, we're the closest SEC school, come play with us. A&M had that, took away that monopoly, and now A&M may be losing that monopoly. But I like that you brought up just going to a bowl and having that moment, because Missouri, that was something I completely forgot about until – we had – I forget the offensive lineman's name, Luckett, but this dude came up – what was his name?
Case Cook.
Case Cook, he comes up to the podium. He's got his cowboy boots on, and he's just a straight shooter, man. He had some quick-witted, like, you know, lines here and there. And then when asked about the bowl game, because I completely forgot that they had, they were set to go to the Music City. Was it Music City or Liberty
last Music year? City.
And the other team had to cancel for COVID. And then I believe the previous season, they had a chance to go at 5-7, but they didn't have the APR.
They backed out. Or yeah, was that what it was? It was either that or they backed out because they fired Odom kind of thing.
Yeah, like so they've been in that position 2 years in a row, but haven't got to play in a postseason game. That's got to be killer. Like if you're one of those players.
Because, yeah, they have to be chomping at the bit for sure.
Right, right. And Eli Drinkwitz, we can get to his quips, but when he talked about Kentucky, that was he was willing to talk trash out there, but not about Kentucky because he knows the significance of that game. He doesn't want to give the Cats any more any more motivation. But he also talked just how big it was for them to beat UK last year. That was a huge deal, helped them really get over the hump just to be in that bowl consideration. And you know, Stoops, he wasn't going to go for the fodder when I talked about Missouri. Maybe he didn't want to punch down. You know, he's also the most coachiest coach of all time when it comes to stuff like that and looking ahead. But in Drinkwitz's case, he did not deny the importance of that game whatsoever. And in the words of my radio producer, Trevor Kelsey, we might have ourselves a budding rivalry on our hands.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing with that, like all that stuff has to happen organically. So both teams kind of have to be good at the same time for that to happen. That could be happening, but like, do Kentucky fans care about Missouri? Do Missouri fans care about Kentucky?
No, but it might be a case where the players do. Almost like Mississippi State. We saw those games get really nasty.
I've talked about that. I thought that should be a bigger rivalry, and that just came and went, and it just hadn't lasted. So I don't know if that can really happen. But from importance wise, moving forward, especially these two programs remain competent. One, they're going to be pains in the rear for South Carolina and Tennessee as they try to do their rebuild. And then two, like there could be some, you know, some stepping on each other's toes because you're both trying to accomplish the same thing, which could make, you know, progress for each kind of difficult. And that, like from that aspect, if that happens, and definitely, yeah, you can see kind of a rivalry starting to emerge there. I mean, and Drinkwitz in his comments, Nick, three different questions. He went out in his opening statements and then a couple other questions, he went out of the way to talk about the win over Kentucky was an accomplishment. For us to beat Kentucky, I think it was a big step in the right direction. Was an answer to the question of his reflection back on year one. And so he comes out and throws a great compliment to Stoops to start off and just says, you know, how big that challenge is going to be, the first real road game to face a real crowd early in the season. So, yeah, I mean, they are kind of right there. So that you go to that week two game, yeah, it's going to be really interesting. It's a huge game for both sides. Mm-hmm. There's no getting around that. Missouri's got, you know, Missouri's kind of in the same boat as Kentucky. They've got, you know, a schedule that's pretty manageable. They probably feel like, and if they can win that game early, there's an 8-4 possibility there where you could get into the Outback Bowl and you're playing for a top 25 finish in January.
Yeah. He wasn't willing to really throw shots at Kentucky, but he did throw shots at Texas and his rival Arkansas. There was one guy, he was one of the last ones that Feinbaum had on the show. There was some guys from the Tuscaloosa News that I don't know if they were playing the game like Luckett contemplated playing the game. They're like, we're going to hang around to the end. And one guy asked, you know, just all this realignment talk, would you like to have more rivals? And he was like, well, I think we got a pretty good rivalry with Arkansas. And I can't remember the last time we lost to him. So I really, frankly, I enjoy that rivalry.
Yeah, that was it is kind of a forced rivalry, though. Right. It is kind of forced rivalry because, like, Missouri fans hate they grew up hating Nebraska and Oklahoma.
In Kansas. Yeah.
And Kansas, they're a big rival. And then Nebraska and Oklahoma, for, like, Kentucky, it was, like, Tennessee and Florida, where you just, the schools you just hate.
Right,
And then
you want
to beat really bad.
At least, like, Fayetteville is, you know, Northwest. I mean, if – when I drive there, I spend
regionally, it makes sense,
Missouri,
right?
But yeah. But that was a good shot. And then he really, I mean, I hated the, I think some of the stuff was, it was Thursday and there was nothing else to talk about. But a lot of the folks were like, Eli Drinkwitz stole the show. But it, I mean, come on. I liked his shot like at Texas in, talking about horns down, but damn it. People are falling for it. Hook, line, sinker, like it. And I don't like it, man.
They do love him. He is good in that media setting. And I think, like, seeing him sit down and talk, and same with Beamer, like, I see why both those guys are having success on the recruiting trail. Their charisma and how personable they are, how good they are selling the talking points in their program, pointing out the strengths, burying the weaknesses, keeping the attention on the strengths. You can see why, like, Missouri's on track to have, like, a top 15 class this year. No one's really talking about that, but they're on that kind of pace, which for Kentucky, that's a big no-no. Like, that, right. You don't want that to happen. So you need Missouri to take some L's this year. Maybe hopefully that class can start to fall apart a little bit. But you can see some of the stuff with him. In game, he's really good, I think, as a play caller. But, you know, he's gone as third defensive coordinator in 3 years as a head coach, too. And that defense was really bad at the end of last year. And he had a weird defensive coordinator hire, I thought. So if that doesn't work out, that could be a huge weakness for them.
Yeah, went to the NFL and got Wilkes, who he was the Cardinals.
Unemployment, I'm pretty sure Steve Wilkes was. He wasn't working last year.
Right. But he was Cardinals prior to Kingsbury.
And he was the defensive coordinator for the Browns when they had I can see that guy's face now, the awful head coach.
The guy for the Bengals. Freddie Kitchens.
Yes, Freddie Kitchens.
Yeah, who was the guy? Who's the Bengals guy? Hugh Jackson, that's who.
Right. No, the other bad Browns coach, but yes.
Yeah. There's so many, it's easy to get confused. I lost my train of thought going down those weird roads. But I do think there's an extent of – I wonder if Louisville fans ever worry that they got the wrong guy. Granted, Satterfield
right,
had
– from App,
had,
yeah.
Yeah. Granted, Satterfield had the same had a very similar year one. He didn't turn into recruiting success like Drinkwitz had. But, you know – Bruce Feldman, all of them were writing their stories about Satterfield this time last year. And now we're seeing that happen with Drinkwitz.
Well, Drinkwitz just had the Power Five and even high level G5 experience. Called plays at Boise State, called plays at NC State, G8 at Auburn. Malzahn is like his mentor. So he's had big time experience at a higher level. Yeah. Right. Where Satterfield had just, like, he went to App State, coached at App State. Went to Toledo and FIU for 3 seasons and then returned to App State for like a decade. He just hadn't had the work experience. Mm-hmm. So, you know, his growing pains are going to be more severe in that job. And that was the biggest question I had with him. And we've seen he hasn't handled a lot of that well, which is why they're kind of in the shape they're in now. But I do want to touch on the Stoops quote we got, Nick, which – one that he just talking about, like, taking the program to national prominence and kind of feeling good where he's at. I'm going to pull that up here right 1 second. But I thought there was a lot of quiet confidence for Mark Stoops when he was at the podium. Like, I think he feels really good with where he, you know, the program's at, even with some of the offseason transition and turmoil.
Right.
I got the quote right here.
Okay. Let it rip, like it.
I said it when I got to Kentucky that we were going to recruit, we were going to develop, we were going to compete. And I wanted to take this program to national prominence, and people laughed at me. We're not there yet, but we're on our way. I'm going to continue to work. I feel good about where we're at. So to me, like,
feels like somebody likes his team.
Yeah, that number one, that sounds like he feels pretty good about his team. And I think he's still, like, there's still some of that Youngstown chip on the shoulder. They're still sleeping on us kind of thing that they're always going to have over there. And I think he feels confident in that offense, that they're going to be competent on that side of the ball. And I think he thinks his defense is going to be pretty good again. And with that schedule they have, I think they think they're going to have a really good chance to log a bunch of wins this year.
Yeah, and I think if things are trending, keep trending this way towards realignment, this might be the last time you get a schedule like this.
Right.
You know, you kind of got to strike while the iron's hot. You got a difficult October, but the rest sits up pretty. So you got to go take advantage of it. And to get back to where we started with predicted order finish, I thought Missouri was going to being that kind of team that was the talk of the East as the next one up after Florida, and that ended up being Kentucky.
Yes.
So that was a pleasant surprise. It wasn't necessarily reflected in all SEC selections. Which you had Kennard first team, obviously, Fortner and Rodriguez third team, Pascal second, Corker third, and no specialist anywhere. Not a Wandale, not a
right. Josh no Wandale Holly. Was a surprise. But that's about what I thought, which Kentucky, that's pretty strong.
Can you just explain what was happening when you were making your picks? Because when I was scrolling through the ballot, I did it a little bit for you, and I was like, "Oh God, he's gonna lose it. He is going to lose his mind."
Yeah. First thing on the Missouri, like I think Drinkwitz went on the last day, and a lot of these ballots were casted before he talked. If he would have talked on Tuesday or Monday, I think we could have saw something a little different. But at the same time, I think Stoops has – it's just the longevity. He's been there. He's got a name. Kentucky just keeps winning. Like, I think there's now, like, regionally, I think there's just some faith in him. We've seen it national media-wise talking about the job he's done last year. I just think it's taken 9 years, but I think he's finally kind of earned that respect.
They're just you know what? Kentucky's going to show up. They're going to win 7 or 8 games. They're going to beat you up in the trenches.
They're going to be good on line scrimmage. They're going to run the football. They're going to play good defense. And then if they – who knows? And that was the talk about it, like on SEC Network and stuff. It's like if they can figure out the quarterback play, like they could have something.
Chris Doering called it the most important quarterback competition in the SEC.
So, yeah, I just think that's kind of what he earned. Now we can get into all SEC teams. I start here every year, but they have 3 offensive tackles, 1 guard, and a center on the first team. Like, they clumped the guards and tackles together. I just – the way they clumped all the defensive backs together.
Defensive backs one drives me the craziest because
– they're even listed – well, guards and tackles, are, like, they're listed different on all these rosters. I don't – why are we grouping them together? Linebackers the same way. Like, there's edge players, and then there's inside linebackers.
It's silly.
Like the first team defense, if I can find it here, like you've got Adam Anderson and Will Anderson Jr., both Georgia and Alabama. Like they should be on there, but those guys are edge players. They're not like Mike linebackers. And then like we just had the blind faith Alabama picks with Toa Toa and Christian Harris. Both those guys are good. Both those guys are pros, but like Grant Morgan at Arkansas was better than both of them last year. He was a monster for a surprising defense. He led the league in tackles. He was all over the place. Like that's a kid that deserved to be first team all SEC. And they just like Toa Toa was not good last year for Tennessee. A lot of it probably wasn't his fault, but he was not good. And then Grant Morgan was a first team all SEC guy, and just the blind faith picks like that. Those are things that get on my nerves. But the setup was more ridiculous. Justin Schaefer, PFF had him a first team offensive guard at Georgia. They only allow you so many players per team, I guess, to nominate. So he wasn't on the ballot. Tyke Smith was a first team All-American at West Virginia last year.
First team All-American. All-American. Like best in the nation.
He was not on the ballot. Blind faith. The center position, Nick Broms, Auburn, run-of-the-mill center, average center at best. The best center is probably the guy Missouri has, Michael Maietti, third team center. I know I'm getting in the weeds a little bit, but it just like how we do this is just crazy.
You pick the brands, and that's why I think when I made mine this – in addition to being bullish on Kentucky guys, I think Toto, I think he was the only
It's not just Alabama guy
I had in there, you know? Like, I try to just avoid that Alabama guys.
Yeah. And the problem I have with Brands is, like, Nakobe Dean was a top 20 recruit from Georgia, inside linebacker. He started for Georgia last year, was good for Georgia. He was better. I thought he was better than the two guys Alabama had last year. He's third team, but the Alabama guys are first team. I'm just like, this is just stupid. Like, what are we even doing here? And yeah. I know it just drives me crazy. And then you got six defensive linemen on the first team. Like, what? I just don't get it, man. I guess Adam Anderson, he wasn't even on the first team. I'm looking now. What team was he on? Oh, did he not even make it? Well, that's a mistake, because he might win SEC Defensive Player of the Year. Because he's the best. Adam Anderson is going to be the first guy since Josh Allen to reach double-digit sacks. That's my hot prediction. So you all have heard it here. If you can get that exotic player, your sports book, go ahead and play it, because that's
there you go. Heard it here first, folks. Yeah, he's not even on an all SEC team because he probably got lumped in with linebackers.
He did.
Yeah, and then the people are busy picking stand-up guys. It don't make any sense. And it's funny every year to see how things shake out. And the ties this year is even funnier. I hadn't seen that up until now, where they're just like, well, they had the same amount of votes. We're just going to stick them all on the team. So a lot of all SEC selections. Luke Fortner is going to end up playing center, and, you know, he's just offensive lineman. So funny how all this stuff works out. Almost as funny as realignment talk, because Luckett, I forgot what percent I put it at earlier on the week, but we needed to record before you hit vacation next week, because by the time you get back, the SEC could have 16 teams. Hell, they might have 20 by the time you get back.
Yeah, it could be we could have an NWO SEC takeover.
Seriously.
Of college football. But yeah, man, I just think it's crazy. But one thing I do want to say, Nick, like, all of this is happening very, like, smooth and easy. Mm-hmm. And that's not how conference realignment works. Like, if you're Georgia or Florida, or even LSU, I would throw in this bucket.
Yep.
You're in the SEC, you're grinding it every year. You're recruiting at a high flight level, and it's still hard for you to potentially win a national championship. Why in the world would you be cool with number one, Oklahoma coming in, and then Texas as well? Like, I don't understand why, like those people would just be like, all right, let's do it. I know money is all, but, like, at what point do we get to, like, how much money is, like, I mean, they're making so much now, I guess is my point.
At what point is there no return? Is more money not giving you the advantage?
I think
it becomes where it's almost irrelevant.
Yeah. I think part of this is driven by lack of attendance at games. Like, I think they're looking to more SEC games. And then if you can add, like, some of these brand names, like, obviously – it's going to be easier for them to sell tickets.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to, like, go out and schedule Texas or have Texas and Oklahoma in your conference to do it. And then A&M is not going down without a fight.
Nope. The Texas State Legislature is not either. I saw where they sent something to the governor. They got to put their 2 cents in, you know.
A guy from Lubbock did that, which that has a very little chance of passing through. So, like, but the big thing is their border, A&M Board of Regents, and what kind of mess they can make with the SEC office. Is it so that's my only thing. There's still a lot of hoops to jump through for this. I mean, it looks like it's going to happen, but, like, we're going to get some drama over these next couple weeks.
We're still in those very early stages.
Yeah. Well, the fact that they kept it, like, the fact that Texas has been doing this for 6 months, 3 to 6 months, wherever, and they've kept it quiet. Like, shout out to their new athletic director, Chris Del Conte, because that is like near impossible to do. to do that, like that, I mean, that's a sign to me, like, they might have their act together. I mean, he's gone and hired a new football and basketball coach. He, you know, he's pulling off this boss move and got Oklahoma to join him. Like, that could be good stuff for Texas.
Yeah, and I love, too, that we're also so early in the like the reactionary phase that we're just going to like the nth degree. You know, like we take these steps in logic so far so quickly.
You have to let the cake bake a little bit here.
Oh yeah. And like there's no like legitimate reports out there. They're all kind of, oh man, I heard they're going to be going after Clemson, Ohio State, and Michigan too, which would just be a hilarious, like, okay, so is this just going to be like the haves versus the haves nots? I think we're like you said, there comes a point where you're putting ducks way too far. Actually, I should say the horse way too far behind the cart, and it's just not going to work that way. Now, still fun though, still a lot of fun.
Oh, realignment Twitter is the best version of college football Twitter. I mean, it is like last night was I was just sitting on my couch by myself, cackling out loud with some of these tweets.
Oh man, it's good stuff. It's enjoyable, but we finally get to exhale a little bit. Fan day will be 2 weeks from today. Yeah, 2 weeks from today, April 7th, Saturday morning. They haven't released any further details as to how that'll work. I know it was always a lot of pictures and autographs in the past. Don't know if that'll change because of COVID protocols or what have you, but only we'll have that out later.
Yeah, and I want to say one more thing on realignment from Kentucky's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whatever pod they're in is going to be like determine my thought on this. Like, if they're in the right pod with, like, Vanderbilt, Missouri, Tennessee, then they're going to be fine. If they don't and they put them in another pod, like, that's not going to be good for Kentucky. It's going to make football pretty much impossible. And, like, you know, from that point of view, it's going to determine, like, how much is the money worth it and how much is it worth just getting, you know, because then you're going to – what it's going to lead to is you just becoming a doormat again. And so they're going to have, like – we'll see how all this goes, but like if the ACC is making money and there's an opening and they already have an ESPN contract, like you could, you know, potentially go there and basketball would be king and you have a chance to be competitive in football. Like obviously we got to get a lot, you know, get there. But that's just something that's popped in my mind so far.
Interesting. I know I've heard folks say that plenty of times before, especially Louisville fans around here. You'd be better off in the ACC. But I think that there's like it comes down to you need 75% of the league to vote it for that to happen. You definitely have Texas A&M against. You really only need what, two more to make it happen, or three more? You only need four. Missouri's probably on the fence as well. I, you know, is Arkansas going to be against it too? Probably. So
it's just the money aspect of this all is just going to be crazy. I mean, I don't know, like, that's why we don't know, like, has the league office had talks with the ADs and presidents about this, and are they all for it? I mean, we're hearing source reports that it's gonna pass 13-1. I mean, okay, I mean, we don't know what that means. I mean I'm interested to see, like, it, because it on the surface it doesn't make a lot of sense for a lot of teams in this league outside of like Alabama. I mean, Alabama doesn't care, especially as long as they got Saban. Mm-hmm. But to add to like big shots like that, because in expansion before it was never adding a big shot blue blood. They added South Carolina, Arkansas in 92. Then they added A&M, Missouri. A&M at the time was not like what they are now. They were lower rung. Yeah. So at the time it was just kind of expanding your footprint, but it was never coming at, you know, the big dogs in the conference. This is doing that. And so I'm just interested to see how everybody kind of sees that.
Yeah. Long way to go still, but I'm sure plenty will happen when you're gone. I think things will slow down relatively until we get to the start of camp here in 2 weeks. But there will still be some news from time to time. And as always, we're going to be all over it. Like it? Hey, this was a fun Media Days experience. It had a little bit of everything, and I hope you enjoyed your first trip to Hoover.
I did. Atlanta next year, and then I think Nashville after that. So we're going to get to move around a little bit. And then if this Texas-Oklahoma thing happens, we're going to be in Dallas, I would imagine, at Jerry Jones' stadium for one of these things.
That could be something. Could be really something, Clark. But hey, go enjoy your weekend. We're happy to give you a little extra football content. And lucky you enjoy your vacation. It was a fun time. I hope you had a happy birthday hanging out with your pal Nick Saban, not Nick Roush. And we hope you all enjoyed all of our coverage from down here at Media Days. There's still plenty of cleanup work to be done that you'll find on the site throughout next week. And as always, remember to go Cats and go Kroger.